Us now. Antonia is joining us today. She's talking about at that time of international trade tensions, the UK government has leapt to the rescue of its floundering steel industry. Tell us more about this, Antonia.
Well, let's start with the headline we've got in the Financial Times on this story. UK races to secure coal to keep British steel furnaces operating. These are Britain's last virgin steel blast furnaces, and they were taken under government control on Saturday in emergency legislation. This after the Chinese owners made it clear they were winding up this plant. They were planning to cancel or even just not pay for their last orders of raw materials, the coal and the iron ore. So the government is now scrambling to source that so that the furnaces don't cool down, because when a furnace cools, that's more or less a death sentence. Now, the Times is looking at this from a particular angle, the China angle. Call to stop China from sabotaging UK industry. Now, these furnaces were acquired by the Chinese company Jingwei in 2020. And in the inside pages of the Times, you have this suggestion of sabotage of the Scunthorpe furnace. The suggestion, the question they're asking, was this the strategy of the Chinese company to take over these blast furnaces, buy up strategic industries abroad to run them into the ground with a view to increasing reliance on Chinese imports? One MP cited in this article says that the closure of this plant was absolutely what the owners wanted, pointing out additionally that the government had come up with proposals to come to the rescue of this plant earlier, proposals that didn't seem to interest the owners. Now, The Guardian has this piece on nationalisation. Now, so far, the company hasn't been nationalised. It's been taken into government control. But nationalisation looks now quite likely. This columnist is extremely pro-nationalisation. And she points out that while for a long time nationalisation was a bit of a dirty word for the left and the right in the UK, it now seems like less of a taboo, and the drive for sovereignty in the current trade climate may mean that nationalisation is viewed very differently.
Yeah, a lot more to come on that story, I'm sure. Something completely different for you now. We're going to take you to Africa. 2 years after a coup ousted the 55-year-long Bongo family dynasty in Gabon, voters have handed a resounding mandate to strongman Oligui Nguema. What are the press saying about it? Saying in Gabon, in fact.
Well, let's start with Agence Gabonaise de Presse, which has got this article that's extremely pro Brice Oligui Nguema, formerly military transition leader, now civilian president. It has this just list of his triumphs, the ousting of Ali Bongo, a national participative democracy project he ran last year. And it describes his political offering as structured and sober. Now, he won 90% of the vote. So it's fair to say he is extremely popular, and that does seem to reflect the spirit in Gabon at the moment. However, in the French press, there are a couple of health warnings. Le Figaro describes him as popular and close to the people. The president embodies a new era, which sometimes resembles the old one, it says. It points out that the Gabonese media rarely challenged him during the presidential campaign, and points to other democratic red flags, as it were, including the fact that one prominent opposition figure was banned from running due to an administrative problem. Libération, also here in France, is talking about that election day. They have the testimony of a Gabonese man, Yuan, who said, "An election without tanks in the street, internet cut off, borders closed. I've never seen anything like it." He praises Nguema as well, but says that like many Gabonese people, he remains vigilant. They know this man has links to the Bongo family, that he has had a lot of support from former supporters of Ali Bongo. So he says, this article concludes, "The moment of truth is just beginning."
Finally from Antonia, in these strange and troubled times, the survival bunker apparently is beginning to proliferate. This is in the US, isn't it?
Yes. So this is a piece from the New York Times, a heavily illustrated piece. In 2023, you may or may not know that survival bunkers were an $11 billion industry, with one in three American adults preparing for doomsday in one way or another. And panic rooms, survival bunkers, are more and more increasingly available for all budgets. So let's have a look at some of the options. This is just $20,000 for a panic room of this style. These buried bunkers and former storage depots are available at $55,000. Dollars for a 99-year lease. And then there are slightly more upmarket bespoke solutions like these that can be fitted in homes. This is a fireplace door with a bit of a sense of humour. It opens when the James Bond theme is played on a nearby piano, so you wouldn't want to be caught short on your piano skills at the crucial moment. A lot of them conceal these sort of hidden arsenals and rifle gun storage like this one. And then at the very top end of the spectrum, you have fortresses like this one being built in an undisclosed location. There is a heat generating tunnel. One of the tunnels to access the island can be heated up to keep intruders out. And the moat is, of course, flammable with cannons that can spray flammable substances onto the surface of the water to send it up in flames. Once again, at the crucial moment, an extremely expensive alternative to the burglar alarm.
It is a bit James Bond, isn't it? I'm not sure about the fridge one. You know which one I mean, the first one there. I think that would be highly unpleasant. But anyway, Antonia, thanks a lot. There it is. Antonia Kerrigan with the papers for us here on France 24.